Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Left of Straight Show with your host, Scott Fullerton, as we discuss everything under the rainbow sun, from LGBT issues to foodies, entertainment to books. Join us as we talk to some of the most interesting leaders and celebrity LGBT guests and allies on the internet. So grab a cocktail, it's always happy hour somewhere, and enjoy the show. Now, here's your host, Scott Fullerton.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Left of Straight Show. I'm your host, Scott Fullerton. It is Monday, August 1st, 2016. Can you believe it's August already? Oh, my God. It feels like the leaves just got back on the trees here in Ohio, and they're going to start falling off again in a month or so. Well, welcome to the show, everyone. I hope you had a fantastic weekend. Got a great show for you today. We just have one guest today. It'd be an hour-long show. We're going to bring the amazing actor and acting coach and teacher. Kevin Scott Allen is in the play with our good buddy Terry Ray right now, Electricity, in Southern California. So we're going to bring him in and talk about his acting life and the new book he put out. He'll be on in just a couple of moments. But like I said, I hope you had a great weekend. Lots of stuff happening here in beautiful Northeast Ohio. First thing is, I don't know if you guys are big Huffington Post readers. I like reading the Huffington Post, especially the gay voices section. But our good friend of the show, Ken Schneck, he has his own reader. He was a guest just a couple of weeks ago right here on the show. He hosts the internet radio show, This Show Is So Gay. He was our guest just a couple of weeks ago, and he wrote a fantastic op-ed piece in the Huffington Post last week. I think it was Thursday or Friday. They canceled Cleveland's Pride last week, 2.5 weeks before it was supposed to go. Cleveland Pride was scheduled for August 13th. It's their 39th running this year, their 39th Pride Festival, and the organizers canceled it, citing security reasons, 2.5 weeks before. So our good friend Ken wrote this fantastic thought piece on it in Huffington Post, just so eloquently describe what everyone's thinking, because something just seems a little amiss, especially when you're citing security scenes. Now, a little background, for the past quite a few years, Cleveland Pride's been at George Voinovich Park, which is a fantastic venue right on Lake Erie, and it's very kind of secluded. You have to go down this little hill. And it's a park that's kind of, there's a boat dock on one side of it and then a little playground or a parking lot thing on the one side. So you really only have to fence off one side. And it's very discreet, very all compact, all by itself. Nice big area right on Lake Erie, but it's very blocked off and by itself. So it makes it very easy to have access to. You can kind of guard the access very easily there. So it's been in a great location. Well, they're renovating George Voinovich Park this year. So they had to move it to an open mall type space, which I'm not too familiar with that space, to be honest with you. They're moving it to another area. So they announced that they're not going to have the festival because of security reasons and the climate. They didn't feel that they had adequate time to train personnel. So a couple things there. I mean, one, 2 weeks before is not the time to decide you haven't trained people properly. You should have started thinking about that a couple of weeks back, maybe a couple of months back, and letting people know and see how they can help or get volunteers to help. Two, mind you, this is Cleveland, Ohio, that just held the Republican National Convention 2 weeks ago without a hit. I mean, the Cleveland Police Department did such a super job. No problems. It was amazing. They arrested like 26 people which is less people protesting, you see, all over the place. So it was done very well. When the Cleveland Cavaliers won the basketball championship this year, they organized a parade with almost 1 to 2 million people showed up in like 2 days' notice, and there was no problems whatsoever. So security is kind of a weird thing. So something's it's been a big bone of contention here in the Northeast. So great job, Ken Schneck, for writing that piece on it. I will give a big hats off to the LGBTQ Center of Cleveland, Phyllis, and I forget Phyllis's last name, and the Stonewall Democrats and a lot of other leaders in the not just LGBT, but our straight allies in Cleveland area are trying really hard to throw something together in a 2 week period of time. So what's going to happen, I'm not sure, but I'm definitely going to go out and support it and celebrate it. And I want to thank those that are trying to get something to happen, because losing it after 39 years is kind of a big deal. And we really want to make sure, especially after everything that's happened with Pulse and all that this year, that we don't want to break that tradition. So anyway, that was in the news. Also, of course, you know that I'm a huge political buff. I apologize in advance. The next 99 days is going to get kind of ugly as far as political things go. I am a huge political junkie in general. I am a very staunch Democratic supporter, but I do vote my conscience. And it's going to be a 99 days till the election. And I just think this election is so important. This year, my conscience is speaking Supreme Court, Supreme Court, Supreme Court. We need to have a balanced Supreme Court that's not going to overturn all the rights and strides we've made for women, for minorities, for LGBT, especially in my concern. And it's very important for this election. So we had the Democrat National Convention last week, a lot different message than Republicans were, a lot more star power. But it was a great event overall, I thought. And then Saturday, if you guys follow me on social media, you know that Saturday I went to a rally. Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine, the vice presidential nominee, did a bus trip after the Philadelphia convention. They went from Philadelphia to Harrisburg to Pittsburgh to my town of Youngstown to Columbus, Ohio. So mom and I went out. We volunteer here. We're big volunteers. We actually use our house for a base of operations for phone banking and things like that. So we were given VIP treatment. Thank you very much, Riley, to go to the – we're going to volunteer, but end up they had enough volunteers that just sat us in the bleachers to wait for Hillary on Saturday. And it was a – it has its problems. I mean, it was a very small event considering that it's off their location. It was in East High School in their gymnasium. So it really didn't hold a lot of people. It was, of course, hot. It's the middle of summer here. And it's not California hot or Southwest hot. It was only about 85 degrees, but the humidity's high and there was just a lot of people in there. So, and there was no place to get really drinks of water or anything. So we had like 3 people pass out to finally started throwing out some bottled water. Because of all of her events leading up to it, she was about 2.5 hours late for an event that was supposed to start at 7:45. That didn't start till 10:20, the official event with her. With a couple of our local people start maybe a half hour before that, maybe 10 to 10. But it was a little crazy for that event and a long time waiting because we had to be there at 4 o'clock as volunteers and to help. So from 4 o'clock till midnight, we were there. And then we went out to dinner with a bunch of people afterwards. So it was a all-day, all-night event. But I got some great pictures of President Clinton, nominee Hillary Clinton, Tim Kaine, our local representatives were there. So if you're not following me on social media, please go to Instagram and the Twitter, and it's at Left of Straight, LeftOfStr, and the number 8. And on Facebook, you can do the Left of Straight Show for our page and like our page, or just follow me personally. It's Scott Fullerton on Facebook. But I had a lot of great pictures that I tweeted out. So that was kind of a fun weekend. 99 days to the election. It's going to be close, and I really hope that we win. Last thing we'll talk about, and then we'll get ready for our good friend Kevin to come on in just a couple moments here. But this Friday, starts the Summer Olympics down in Rio de Janeiro. So opening ceremonies is Friday night. It is bittersweet for me because I love watching the Olympics. But this summer was supposed to be the summer Paul Ruggieri was going to be on the U.S. men's Olympic team. He just barely missed the cut. But I do want to give a big shout out to the U.S. men's gymnastic teams. You guys all know I'm a huge fan of U.S. men's gymnastics. So the team going to Rio this week is Sam McCulloch, Jake Dalton, John Orozco, Alex Nador, and who am I missing? Oh, of course, Chris Brooks. So it's like, I'm so disappointed that our good buddy Paul Ruggieri didn't make it there. I'm trying to get him to be my special Olympic correspondent. But if he's been having some great press, if you haven't seen his interview on GQ magazine recently, he's just amazing. He was on our show a couple months back, and I'm going to try to have him back real soon to talk about the Olympics. So that should be all signs, all types of cool stuff happening with that. So that's what's happening. We're going to go ahead and take a small break. When we come back, we're going to have the amazing actor and author Kevin Scott Allen on. You're listening to Left to Straight Radio. We're going to play a little Annie Baltic. This is Low Key. Be back in just a couple of moments.
Thank you.
And we are back. That's the amazing Annie Baltic with Low Key. I'm so excited to have our first guest here today. He is just an amazing actor and author. He's currently co-starring with our good friend Terry Ray in the play Electricity. It's a sexy, funny, and amazing love story of two men who only see each other once every 10 years and how their lives and society kind of change around them over four decades. As an actor, Kevin's appeared in television and movies, everything from Star Trek Deep Space Nine to Mad Men, from the movie Charlie Valentine to Switchboard. He's also an author whose new book, Conquering the Film and Television Audition, is a master's class for anyone looking to build their skill set in being a working actor. I'm so excited to have him on the show today. Please welcome to the show, Kevin Scott Allen. Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing great, Scott. Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, it's my pleasure. I've heard so many great things about you. Terry is such a good friend of the show, and he's enjoying doing the show with you so much. And I'm glad to meet you and kind of learn a little bit about your story. So welcome.
Well, thanks. Yeah, Terry's terrific. He wrote a phenomenal piece. He's written a number of really good things on film and television, and this particular play was just amazing when he wrote it. He sent it to me, and I looked at it, and I thought, okay. And I sent it to my manager, which is what I, in the contract I have with her, everything that I receive goes to her as well. And
gotcha.
She called me back and said, so, do you need me to drive you to this audition? Because she was so thrilled with the piece. And she actually had finished reading it before I did. And I said, oh, really? It's that good? She said, yes, dear. So I said, okay, thank you. That's all the encouragement I need. And went
that
from there.
Is awesome. I'm so glad to hear that. Well, we're going to talk all about the play in a little bit, but let's make it all about you at first. Let's start getting to know you a little bit. Where did you grow up, and talk about that, and what got you interested in theater or dramatic arts?
I grew up kind of everywhere. I was born in Long Beach, California, and I lived out here as a child. And then my mother traveled a great deal and would take us with her. So I went to school in Switzerland for a little bit and came back here, worked, did some, film and TV when I was a child, then went to back east and lived in Washington, D.C., went to boarding school in New Jersey, and came back out here to go to college and did some more acting again. I don't know what started me in it. I just know that I always wanted to do it. My mother used to tell a tale that when I was, two or three, I came out dancing into the living room one day and said, Broadway's waiting for me. Now, how would have known what Broadway even was at that age is totally beyond me. But that's what she said I did. And at first, they kind of tried to talk me out of wanting to be an actor. Why do you want to do that? You should be a lawyer, or you should be something else. But, I started getting work as a kid, and I think they thought it was a phase I would probably grow out of, and I didn't. It just seemed to be the most natural route for me to take.
Awesome. Now, were you an only child, or do you have brothers or sisters?
No, I have actually one real brother, and then I have five half brothers and sisters. So we were at one point we were seven kids and under one roof.
Oh my goodness!
Quite something. Which made for fun summers when everybody would bring a friend over. And we'd have a house 14, 15, 16 people for dinner. It was really – those were fun.
Oh, my goodness. You had to act just to get attention around that house, I'm sure. Goodness gracious.
Exactly. And everybody in my family is really rather outgoing. So sometimes conversations – I learned at an early age to carry on four conversations at once. Because you would be. You'd comment here. You'd look forward and comment there. You'd answer a question over to the right, another one behind you, then you'd keep it going. And we all could do that pretty well. And friends would just sit there and shake their heads at the cacophony in the house. And they couldn't believe it that we all were having coherent conversations at the same time. But that was
funny.
The craziness. Yeah,
there you go. Just
hilarious.
Self-preservation there, just to be
exactly.
Part of the conversation. I love it. That's amazing.
Exactly.
So what were some of your earliest memories of school? Were you always interested in the acting part? Were you in the directing part? What kind of drew you to the stage? What part of it?
I was always interested in the acting part. I did have to take directing when I went to college, and I'm glad that I did. And I encourage any actor, I even the students I teach now, I encourage them, take directing classes, take writing classes, so you understand more than just your little part in the industry. In fact, I had a wonderful conversation with the director last night, Lauren Ramey, who, after the show, he said, "I'm so excited I'm taking an acting class." And I said, "That's great." And he said, "You know, I've learned so much about how to talk to actors now because I've been on their side of the camera." He said, "Very little, it's just a little class," but he said, "I'm really, it opened my eyes up." And so I took a directing class or two in college and liked it, and have directed. I've directed plays before and I enjoy it, but the most enjoyment I get is out of acting. I think because there's a degree of abandon that you have when you're an actor that you can't have when you're producing, writing, or directing. You have to have most of the things under your wing, under control, when you're in those jobs. As an actor, you don't. You can, yes, you have, of course, you have to, you know, say your lines and know what the shot is and do all that, then that has to be a controlled performance. But there's a part that is not controlled, that's abandoned, that's spontaneous, that's life. And that's what, when you hear people talk about an actor, how they couldn't take their eyes off him or her, and they were sitting on the edge of their seat because they didn't know what they were going to say yet or say next, that comes from that abandon that an actor can put into his or her performance. And I miss that when I'm not doing it.
I love that.
So that's what,
but
yeah,
like
it,
you said,
really,
I think one of the cool things you said is that I think everyone can learn from every other thing. We'll talk about that more in the book. You said your book, even though it's an auditioning class, it's also good for writers because it gives you character. So that there's so much kind of nuance you can learn by studying the different parts of the business. So I think that's awesome to talk about. What was your very first at professional acting gig, so to speak?
The very first one, I was a young child. It was a TV series called Bearcats, which was very short-lived, 13 episodes, shot in New Mexico, and it was Rod Taylor and Dennis Cole, about two guys who toured the Wild West, and I think it was a 1913 Stutz Bearcat. Beautiful.
Oh, my goodness.
And they just sort of, it was hilarious. And they, you know, they would ride into town in this huge white convertible, you know, car and solve the problems of the town, whatever they happened to be. And it was a kind of a Western with a car, essentially what it was. And I had no idea what
cool.
I was doing. Marvin Comsky was the director. They picked me out, a bunch of kids, and I had no idea what I was doing. I just did what he told me to do, and I was terrified the whole time, which was wonderful because the character was a terrified kid. So it worked out. But
it
that
worked
was the
well.
First thing
yeah.
I did. Yeah, exactly. And then from there, did some other things as a kid as well.
Then you wanted a soap opera, too. You were the Young and the Restless and everything. How's the soap gig? Because I hear that there's so much dialogue. What kind of a character were you? Did you have to be one of the ones that got 12 pages of dialogue today to read, or how did that work out for you?
Actually, I've done four. I think it's four now. Young and the Restless, General Hospital, Passion, Days of My Life. So four. And each time they were a little bit different. I usually play off-center guys. So General Hospital, I was a drug addict. Young and the Restless, I actually was a very clean-cut guy who just bought a lot of drugs. In Passions, I was a mental hospital character. That was a weird show, and it was so much fun to do because it was so over the top. And,
did you get to work with Juliet Mills? I hate to interrupt, but I love Juliet Mills. Did you have a chance to work with her?
No, our storylines did not cross
in
that one. But she what a dream. I agree with you. And the Days of Our Lives also got a drug dealer. But it is a lot of dialogue, but it's no more, I think it's a lot less dialogue than when you have a play, depending on the size of the role.
Well,
and
that's
the thing
true, right?
That impressed me is the older actors who had been on soaps for years were amazing. Because you're right, they would get a script a night, and you have to go home, and you could have pages of dialogue. And they don't do this anymore. Or at least they didn't the last time I did a soap, which was Days of My Life a couple of years ago. But they used to have cue cards where there would be somebody standing with a piece of paper or cardboard that was maybe 3 feet by 3.5 feet. And on it, in quite large letters were written, the dialogue, and they were sent right next to the camera. And there was one man in particular, David Lewis, was on Denmark Hospital for years, who could glance at that card and pick up two and three sentences in the span of maybe 2 seconds and
wow.
talk as if it were the most natural thing in the world. And I used to just stare at him in amazement. And he said, I don't memorize my lines at night. He said, I can't. It's too much to memorize. I familiarize myself with the dialogue, but I know they're on the cards, and he was that good at it. Every time I tried that, it messed me up. I couldn't do it. I couldn't split my focus.
That's
so
amazing.
I had to memorize. He was amazing.
Wow.
And so they're just incredible at that. I don't. It was a skill they picked up, I guess, from the early days of television.
That is so cool. Well, you've been on dozens of television shows, but I got to ask you about a couple, because one of the reasons I do this
sure.
show is because I'm such a fan. I'm not in the business, but I'm the hugest show business fan ever. So a couple things I want to know about. You were on Homefront with Kyle
yes.
Chandler, who I love, and it was kind of set in Northeast, or not Northeast, but in Ohio here as well. How was Homefront
yes.
to work on? And tell me about
it
that
was
show.
An utter joy. It was a new show for its time, and that it was, I think it was about the only show at the time that was a period show. And it used to be music and period. Those two things were death to television shows. And we're going to agree
right.
that music became successful on TV. But the writers were amazing, Bernie and Lynn Latham. They wrote this piece about America right after World War II. And what was amazing is they didn't pull any punches. In fact, I had a conversation with Bernie early on, and he pretty much said, your character is racist and bigoted for a reason, and it's because that's how America was in the 40s. As much as we'd like to think that we, wow, post-World War II, we beat back, you know, the horrible, you know, aggression of dictators, and now we're a wonderful free country, it was not that way. And so I was pretty much the resident bigot and racist who did everything he could to rally against anybody who wasn't white Anglo-Saxon.
Wow.
I
live in Northeast Ohio now. It's not too much different.
Yeah.
Thank God it's a little different, but it's kind
yeah.
of scary.
Exactly. In fact, there was one occasion where I had to go back in and loop. Looping is when you go back in after you've shot something and you replace the dialogue for whatever reason. Sometimes there's an aberration in the sound. And this particular time, Bernie said, I want you to go back and change these lines because a little bit of a southern accent came out. And he said, it's imperative that people do not look at your character as a southerner. He has to represent Middle America. I said, oh, shoot, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean for that accent to come out. You know, you don't have to pay me for that day. He said, oh, that'll be stupid. but he was insistent upon that. And it was a lot of fun. Everybody really, really loved the show. Kyle and I, our storylines never crossed, but I would see mm-hmm. him all the time. We'd see everybody. We'd see each other at the Christmas
right.
party, and we'd see each other on set. But I never got to work with him on the show, but he was around and all the time. So,
nice.
But that was a joy. I really loved that show.
Now, let me go off track for a second. You talk about accents.
Sure.
You are very well versed in French. How did that come about? You've been
I went to school in Switzerland for a couple of years. So, and it was all in French. So I had to, it was either learn French or fail. So, and
okay.
I was young, so it was easy to pick up. And ever since then, I have a coterie of some French friends. I've done two French films, but I purposely don't want to keep it up. I don't speak it as much as I used to, but I do have several friends in town, and we get together and we just go to town. But that's how I learned it.
That's awesome. Yeah, I saw one of your clips from one of your French films, and it's just like, it is a romance language. I just wonder where you picked it up. That is so cool. All right, let's go back to a couple more now. The Hitman Diaries, Charlie Valentine, Michael Weatherly, you played Genoza on NCIS. I love Tom Berenger, is just an amazing actor. How was that film to work on?
That was a lot of fun. And what was most interesting is I worked with a gentleman named Raymond Berry, who plays Charlie Valentine. He was on a ton of TV shows. Justified. He was Timothy Oliphant's father on Justified. And what fascinated me about him is that he is a very, very low key energy and way of working. And I remember working with him, and we were, 5 inches apart. if not closer, at one, doing one of our shots, thinking, wow, I don't think this is going to transfer. It's going to look like he's doing absolutely nothing and whatever. And then when I saw film, it's the exact opposite. He was so rich in character without doing anything that it just amazed me. And it was a dream to work with him. And I love the director, Jesse Johnson. He's always, his shoots are a lot of fun. They have action, but they have stories. We had a shootout in a small, like, freezer room that echoed so badly. I'm surprised I can hear to this day. Because we're shooting off automatic weapons, squibs exploding everywhere, and the sound was unbelievably deafening. But it was fun. It was fun and exciting.
That is so cool. All right, next one I want to talk about is I loved Joan of Arcadia. Of course, Barbara Hall,
yeah.
Now does Madam Secretary, which is like one of my favorite shows of all time. But just the people in it, Joe Mantegna and Mary Steenburgen, Jason Ritter, Amber Talman, how was that show to be on the set for?
That was a dream. I've been lucky enough to work with Joe Mantegna twice, and that was the first time I worked with him. And what a gentleman. Just, I was a guest on the show, and he was, you know, the star of the show, or one of the stars of the show, and just went out of his way to, you know, make sure I felt comfortable. It was a kind of a complicated shoot, and the director was a great guy. He had a lot of stuff on his plate to deal with, a lot of technical things. So there was very little interaction between him and the actors, because there was a lot of stuff. I mean, it was one of those things where he was in a whole different part of the set. There just wasn't enough room for him to even be with us. He was at the Video Village,
right,
God knows where, on the soundstage at Sony Studios. And Joe was terrific, because I didn't know the show. I knew the stories, but I didn't know the style. I didn't know anything. And he, you know, was right there to help talk. I had any questions, talk me through it, and we worked through it. And for some reason, I don't know why, we shot that at night, even though it had nothing to do with the night shot. I mean, my call was 6 p.m., and we were there till midnight, and it's all inside. Yeah, I don't know why they shot that late. It may have had something to do with their children on the show, and when they're having their kids on the show, it always creates a scheduling nightmare for the production, because they have to make sure they're schooling. They can only film a certain number of hours. So I have a feeling they shot all the kids' stuff in the day to get it done, and then all the adults they put in at night. But it was
fun.
I really like that show. And that's an example of a great casting director, Chuck McCollum, who had called me in when he was doing another show, The Guardian. And everybody wanted me to do this particular part, and the producer, the creator, everybody wanted me to do a part. One of the producers, other associates, had a friend who they wanted to do this part instead. And Chuck fought like crazy to say, no, everybody wants Kevin. Put him in this part. And at the end of the day, the creator thought, you know what, it's just not worth it to have a falling out with my fellow producer. They want to put their friend in this role. Let's put the friend. Well, Chuck called me in the minute he got Joan of Arcadia and said, come on in. I want you to read for this right away. And I ended up booking it. And that's kind of rare, because a lot of times people on this town
that's
do not
cool,
show
yeah.
loyalty. Yeah, I've told him ever since then, you're my best friend. So
I love that. Well, Barbara Hall's doing Madam Secretary now. We've got to get you on Madam Secretary, because that would be great for you to be on.
It would be a fun show, sure.
A couple other ones. Just give me any story that might – I mean, you were on Star Trek, of course, Deep Space Nine, Prison Break, Bones,
yeah.
Criminal Minds, all of my favorite – of course, Criminal Minds, Joe Mantegna again. But any of those
yeah,
bring
exactly.
any certain memories to you, or any certain stories you have for any of those four?
A couple. We shot Prison Break in a town called Whittier, which is very close to Los Angeles. And what was really frightening is it was shot on the location of an actual – juvenile detention center, and in the maximum
wow.
security part, and that looked like a maximum security adult prison, and it was just for kids, and that was really kind of eerie, thinking, my God, children could be in these cells that were the size of a hallway with no privacy,
wow.
and that was the maximum area, so that was kind of freaky. Star Trek was so much fun. It took 2.5 to 3 hours to put the makeup on, because I played Jemadar, which is a really bizarre character. And, you know, I have done not that heavy makeup before, but it didn't seem to bother me. And until I was talking to the makeup guy, and I said, so, you know, I mean, does anybody ever have a problem with this kind of makeup? Because, yeah, sometimes people get claustrophobic. And, of course, at that moment, I started feeling, oh, Lord, all this stuff. So I had to take a deep breath and say, Kevin, you get that thought out of your brain, because this is the beginning of the week, and you cannot have that now. But that was a great deal of fun. It was a real pain to eat in that kind of makeup. You had to sort of eat everything through a straw, but it was fun. And that was another example of a really fun shoot where everybody enjoyed the show. And nobody
Very
knew
cool.
who I was. So they had to say, have we met before? Because they had all this makeup on. But the cast was terrific.
And then you worked a couple bits on the Jimmy Kimmel show. I love Kimmel. How's he to work with?
Oh, what a fun deal that was. So the latest one was Uberland's driver, where they were making fun of Uber. Because I think New York had come out with the New York Times with an article that actually an Uber response time in the city was faster than an ambulance response time. So they wrote a little bit where somebody gets hurt, and instead of calling the ambulance, they call Uberlance, and I got to play the driver. And it was a lot of fun because we actually improvised and wrote it as we were filming it on the street right behind where Jimmy Kimmel films. And what they would do, as soon as they finished a video card, somebody would run it right up to the production office to begin the editing if they wanted it to air on that night's show, which tapes at about 6 o'clock. And we were filming it at 4:35. So they literally were running it from the camera upstairs to process and to get it edited so it'd be ready for that night's show. And
wow.
It was virtually great. They said, improvise, let's see what we can come up with. And so you felt like you were really a part of the creative process. And that was a lot of fun.
That is cool. Then recently you got to spend a day on the highly buzzed about show, Trial of O.J. Simpson. What was that like? What was the atmosphere on that set?
That was a lot of fun as well. That the director was a dream. It's one of the few times where TV is difficult because everybody is under a lot of time pressure, especially when you're doing an episodic. They only have a certain number of days. Sometimes it's 8, sometimes it's 6, to get a show in the can. And
right.
So there's always a lot of pressure, and a lot of times they go into overtime because they've got to get it done. There's no two ways about it. It has to be done this week. We're filming another episode next week. Well, this, because it was a mini-series and it was not airing as it was being filmed, there wasn't that much pressure to get everything done in a real short time. So the director could say things to us like one time – he said, okay, we've done it a bunch of different ways this take. Kevin, just, I don't know, do something different. I don't know what, just do something different. And that's what you hear on a film set many times. You never hear it on a television. They don't have the time.
Right.
So it was that kind of atmosphere. It was also the kind of atmosphere where everybody greeted me, welcomed me into the family of the show, with hugs and this and that. And I thought, wow. Everybody is so fun and so wonderfully open. And again, a lot of times that doesn't happen on a TV show because that pressure, everybody else is feeling. You know, they've got one script in their hand or they have the other one in their trailer for next week, and they're thinking
right.
about both. So you're nice to the people who are guesting, but you just don't have the time to really visit with them. That wasn't the case here. And I got to work with all these incredible people. And I was looking around the set thinking, my God, there's John Travolta, there's Robert Morse. I'm in heaven here.
Yeah,
that
the
was
cast was incredible and it's got such great buzz. That's had to be a lot of fun. Good deal. All right, well,
I was living right near where that happened, when it did happen in Brentwood. I was actually living on Rockingham. So it brought back a lot of memories.
Wow, I can imagine. Geesh. Well, I could talk about these shows forever. I'm such a fan of all this stuff. But let's go ahead and take a quick little break. When we come back, I want to talk about your book, Conquering the Film and Television Audition, which I think is so cool. And then, of course, we're going to talk about Electricity. So, guys, we're talking to actor and author Kevin Scott Allen. You're listening to Left of Straight Show. In honor of our good friend Terry, we'll play a little bit. I guess his the show that he's on with Michael Vaccaro, Child of the 70s, just put a display up in the Hollywood Museum. So let's play a little Michael Vaccaro, Child of the 70s. We'll be back in just a couple of moments.
Tell me, what would you say if I flashed a peace sign your way? Tell me, how would you react if I wore bell bottom slacks? Do you remember a time when heavy hair was a crime and most things only cost like a dime? And it seemed that we were dancing a hard time. Raise our glass to me, if you please. I'm a child of the 70s. I can boogie down with the great seas. I'm a child of the 70s. I'm just happy grooving along. I wouldn't change if you got down on bended knees. I'm a child.
And that was our good friend Michael Vaccaro with Child of the 70s. We are back with actor and author Kevin Scott Allen. Of course, in our good friend Terry Ray's play Electricity, we're going to talk about all of that in just a second. But you have a new book out this year, my friend. You are Conquering the Film and Television Audition. Now, you've been teaching for a while, and I keep the story kind of goes, you went to one of these classes. It's like, he doesn't really know what he's talking about or something, right? Or how did this come about?
Well, that's actually pretty close to the truth. I was asked to teach at the Allen Feinstein Studio in Sherman Oaks to take over the on-camera class. And I said to Allen, you know, I think instead of just having an on-camera acting class, which everybody in town has, let's make this an on-camera film and TV audition class. Because I had realized I've sat in on hundreds of auditions, and I have a lot of casting director friends. And it was amazing that no matter how skilled somebody was, how experienced they were, a huge percentage of actors had no idea really what to do in an audition. They would they would go in there and just sort of like throw stuff against the wall and hope something stuck. And I realized that not only was an important training that was needed, I start scouring the internet, scouring bookstores, and there's nothing out there that's written about it. There's some great theater audition books, and there are a couple of film and TV audition books that kind of touch on certain aspects, but there was nothing that was comprehensive. Most of the ones that were out there were like one or two paragraphs per page of a book that maybe gave you some audition tips, but nothing really took this process, which is mandatory to master if you want to get a job. You're the greatest actor in the world, but if you can't get a job, then, you know, you're acting for your dog and your cat. So,
right, exactly.
Whereas that's fun because they'll love you no matter what you do. It doesn't pay the rent. So when I started the class, I had a lot of actors of different levels. And it was just amazing. The people right off the bus knew almost as much about auditioning as some people who've been on series regulars. They didn't understand what was required. It's a whole different animal than acting. It's a whole different animal than when you get the job. When you get the job, it's a lot different. Auditioning, it's almost like taking soup and reducing it to a bouillon cube. You have to
gotcha.
Give the directors, you have to give everybody an idea, a filled idea of what you would be like in this part. And you have to give them enough so that they're interested, but not too much that you overpower. And in any event, so I began writing this book as a means. I was simply going to write out some lectures and give them to the students saying, you know what, here this will be talked about today. Why don't you take this home and read it over? And the more I got into it, the more I realized, well, I'm going to have about 50 lectures here if I keep this up. And I thought, what the heck? Let's just wait and let's just see if it takes form. And it, sure enough, a year later, I had a book.
Then, well, congratulations, and you talk about comprehensive. I mean, I love it because there's stuff that I, as a layman that just enjoys movies, I don't think of. But you have it broken down to different types of even auditioning for series regular, guest star, co-stars, different genres. You don't even think about that as a layman, but I guess when you really think about it, you really need to go in there prepared, and you need to offer what the director's looking for. That's amazing.
Well, you're exactly right. Most people don't think about it. One of the things the classes I teach focus on the series regular pilot audition, which is a pilot, you know, is the first show they make of a series, which will set up the entire story. And again, I got this, you know, from my years of working, especially at Homefront, when I learned that when you're creating a series, all the writers, the producers, everybody has a great idea of how they want a show and how they want a story to go. And usually when a pilot's sold, you have at least the first 3 years of storylines plotted out. Because, you know, the networks want to know that you've got more than just, you know, one or two shows. But
sure.
They don't necessarily know how that story's going to play, because that's going to be contingent upon who is in the role. And what I would try to stress to my students is when you're reading for a series regular, you can't just go in there and, quote, do the part simply the way it's written. You have to give them an idea of what kind of a life you could give this character so that they now are sitting there looking at you and thinking of all kinds of interesting story interactions that your energy is going to inspire, as opposed to somebody else's energy. If you just go in there and you just read the lines as written and you're fine, they're not going to see anything beyond what they wrote, and you're not going to be as inspiring to them. That's your job. You need to inspire the writer so they know how to create a character for you. They know how to write the show, and they can see, now here's how we can tell the story. Well, nobody in town really focuses on that or teaches that. They just teach people how to go and be real in front of a camera. And I said to my students, being real is not acting. It's just being real boring. Because, you know, which is true. Acting is not real life. Yes,
right.
You're real in that you're not playing to somebody in the last row of a 250-seat theater, but it's still life concentrated. That's what a story is. They've taken hundreds of thousands of hours of somebody's life, and they've concentrated it into an hour-and-a-half film. So everything you do has to be concentrated. And
I love that.
When I would give this information, their performances or their auditions were amazingly different than my students started the book. So I said, okay, obviously what I'm doing seems to work. They understand it. So that's how it began.
That is so cool. Now, let's talk about a couple of things. What's one of the piece of advice you give? If you're only going in for like a one or two line part audition, what's the key thing to know about when you're going into something like that?
Excellent question. The key thing to do is read every single word on the sides. And sides are what they term the scene. Every word. Because what a one or two line part is, you're almost like an adjective in a sentence. You are helping describe, helping fill in the world of the story and the world of a character. And a one- or two-line part, 90% of the time, is there to either show that the main characters are in conjunction, cohesion with their world, or in contrast to their world. Example, you go in, the lead character goes into a Starbucks to get a cup of coffee, and he orders, and the person says, sorry, we're out of that. Oh, shoot, okay. We're showing the whole point of that scene was to show a character who's in conflict with his world. And it's the teeny thing. It doesn't mean much, but it's a color that the writer has put in. As opposed to that same scene where, sure, sir, here's your coffee, just as expected. He's not in conflict.
Wow.
He's in cohesion. That's why they write scenes like that. They don't write one- or two-line parts just to have. They're written for a reason. So know the reason that character is there. And you can get it very easily by reading the material. It'll tell you. And if you know the reason, now you know what kind of flavor to give your character. And you're not going to give it too much, you won't give it too little, if you know the purpose of that character. So that's the best advice I can tell anybody for a one- or two-line part. You know, other
that's
people
amazing.
Say, oh, just throw it away, just throw it away. It doesn't mean anything. It's not true. It does mean something. You just have to know what it means.
That's amazing. I love the description. It's the adjective. As an English major, I can understand that. I can get behind that. That's so cool.
Yeah, there you go.
We'll talk about, we have so many jillion cable channels now, and a lot of them are doing these reenactment shows. What do they need to know to do a reenactment show?
Oh, those are so much fun. I've told my actors and my students, do not shun them because it's not traditional. You can have so much fun doing them. Again, understand, not only to understand the world of the show, understand how they're telling that story, how that reenactment is. Some of the reenactments, for example, it's mostly action, and there's a lot of voiceover, a narrator saying, when Joe came home that day, he didn't realize that he had been burgled and all that. So your performance is going to simply be an activity that's giving vision to what the narrator was describing. Some of them you're actually improvising, or you actually have scripted material and you're reenacting the story. So you need to know how your story is being told. You need to know what story is being told and how you fit into it. And if you have any questions, ask. Because it's not most reenactment shows, you don't have a script. So your lines, your dialogue, it's not written. They'll simply be descriptions of scenes. And there might be a hint of some conversation, but they pretty much expect you, the actor, to improvise and come up with a conversation. So if you know, again, you know the world of the show, you know the world of this particular story and how your character fits into it. Are you a good guy? Are you a bad guy? Did you contribute to the drama? Are you an innocent bystander? What's going on? If you understand how you will fit into the story, you can more easily then come up with dialogue and action that will fit. And they'll film it and they'll say, great, and they'll have you back.
That is amazing. I love that. I hope all of my aspiring actors, I know a lot of you guys are out listening there, please look at this book, Conquering the Film and Television Audition. It's by Kevin Scott Allen. So cool. Thanks. I learned a lot, and I'm just a layman here. Let's get into electricity now. You guys are on your second or third extended run, so congratulations. You guys are doing such fantastic work there. Tell me about the audition, and have you met Terry before this, or talk to me about that.
Yes. I worked with Terry a number of years ago on a commercial for a product that he had produced, Gadar Gun, and he was doing a commercial for that, so they hired me to be in the commercial. And then I knew him. I would see him at the Television Academy. We had functions, and we would see each other. And I knew him merely on a social basis to say, hey, too, how are you? And I liked him. He was a nice guy, and we would, you know, we talked together at the functions, and that was about it. But it really didn't know much more than that. And then he sent me this email, said, hey, Kevin, I've written this play. Would you be considered? Would you consider, you know, doing a play? And again, I replied, sure, you know, send me the script. And then when I did read it, I liked it so much, and I honestly mean this. Preparing for and going to the audition would have been enough. It was that fulfilling. Wow. A piece to work on. And, you know, I thought, if I get it, great. If I don't, I still will have grown, and I still will have had a wonderful experience. And I honestly meant that. I went and did my thing, and I went home. And a week later, I think, they called and said, would you come back for a callback? And I thought, oh, okay, that's nice. Had to prepare different material, which I loved. Okay, so now I get to gild even more into this character. Went back a week later, did it, and again, felt the same way. It'd be great to get this, but you know what? I've had such a fulfilling time auditioning, and I was so proud of what I did. I got it, great. If I didn't, I didn't. And then 2 hours, they called and said, it's yours. So getting to know Terry then, even more so, has been just a delight. I knew he was a nice guy. I didn't realize how nice until this. And he's a dear. And he's so savvy in social media, which I was not. He's really kind of helped get me into more social media. I mean, you know, I would look at Facebook once in a while when I would remember. And,
right.
You know, now I'm trying to go on more frequently. I have a lot of followers. And, you know, as my agent told me, you know, the trouble is if you don't use social media, it will forget you. So I said, oh.
This is true.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm kind of old-fashioned and old school. And they're dragging me kicking and screaming into the century. So, okay. You know.
I love it. Well, we've had Terry on a couple times, but any new listeners, let's give a brief synopsis. You guys meet at a high school reunion. Take it from there for me.
We meet at a 10-year high school reunion, and two people could not be any more different. Brad, the character I play, is into pretty much anything that is not good for you. Multiple sex partners. You name the drug, it's in his system. You name the alcohol, if he doesn't have it, he'll probably be happy. And that's how he's living life, just whatever. He does whatever he wants, whenever he wants, living in New York City, and doesn't really care about any kind of consequences, which is a pretty, you know, shallow human being. And
right.
Terry's the exact opposite. He's a very he's very shy, very scared. He comes back to this 10-year high school reunion pretending to be married, even though he's gay, and they used to call him Gary the Fairy in high school. He just figures he can never be who he is. He's got to be this very controlled person. And again, Brad's the exact opposite. Doesn't care. Who knows what he's about. And then they meet every 10 years after that. And every 10 years go by. And Terry wrote it that way purposely. He didn't want it to be just the same time next year type story, because he wanted to show the progression of life in the gay community over 30 years, because it was a tremendous
right.
progression. You know, it went from looking both ways before you went into a darkened hallway to go into a bar, because God forbid anybody should ever see you walking in, to now, you know, 2000, you know, the last year of the play, 2013, where, you know, people have gained the right to marry. They're in more and more states, as he says, and now it's pretty much accepted that, you know, to be gay is to be part of the human race, and it's no longer, you're no longer shoved in a closet as a pariah. And he wanted to show that growth. So that's what was every 10 years. And the characters grow. Brad becomes much, you know, less demonized by his life, and starts to become more and more human. And the character Gary learns to stand up for himself and accept who he is, and actually pretty much is Brad's savior. Brad helps Terry come out of his shell in the beginning, and Gary helps Brad survive in the end. So it really was a wonderful arc to it. You have these two characters who, as a number of people have put when they point to my character, oh, we all have somebody then like that in our life. We know it's horrible for us, but we can't resist them.
Yep.
These two characters go through life, and they actually end up helping each other.
I love it. Unfortunately, I have been there, done that myself. So, I relate to your character well. And one of the great things I love about this current run is you guys are doing these talkback series, and you've had amazing people. You've had Don Wells, who was mentioned frequently in the show, and of course, you had Tess Harper. And this last weekend, you had a twofer. On Friday, you had Alison Arngrim, and then you had Frances Fisher. You don't know how much I love Frances Fisher. That was last night. Talk to me about this weekend. Yes. How did the shows go with these two talkbacks?
It was a lot of fun. Alice and I had known for a number of years. I hadn't seen her in a while. But she came on Friday, and she's so fun. She's full of life and perky and asked some really fun questions. And how it works is we bring the person on stage, and, of course, everybody in the audience is shy at first. So we have to get, the celebrity's job is to introduce questions to get people comfortable with the idea, perhaps, that it's okay, you can talk to the actors, you can talk to Terry, also as a writer, and we've also brought up the producer and director, so they can ask questions. And people then start, all of a sudden, once it starts, it's hard to get them to shut up. And then Frances was last night, and again, delightful human being. The lovely thing about it, and Tess did the same thing Tess offered, is they'll also share experiences from their own performing career and audiences love that, whether it's because they did a role that was similar or a role that was vastly different or whatever it is. So it's not just, hi, let's ask Terry and Kevin a question. Let's make this almost like a round table discussion. And the audiences love that. And I love that. I love hearing, Tess Hoffman talk about working with Robert Duvall. And just some of those experiences. And Frances was talking about performing in shows and how, reaching the audience and connecting with an audience is important. And it loosens the audience up. And it's also kind of an extra, you get two for the price of one, so to speak. You get more bang for your buck. And the audience has been responding beautifully to that.
That is so cool. Then this weekend, you got a couple of big things coming on. Not only is Lonnie Anderson doing the talk back, I believe, Sunday, but this Friday is really important. You have Kat Kramer coming on. You guys are donating half the proceeds of the ticket sales to Project Angel Food out in L.A., which is a great organization out there. I don't know if you're up to talk about it or not, but
event. When we were asked to come back and do an extension, had the producer and Terry, or the director was out of town, over for dinner to my house to talk about maybe some strategies for the next second run. And one of the things we had talked about was inviting a charity such as Project Danger Food to share the house with us one night, because they've been such phenomenal supporters and lifelines for the gay community over the years. I mean, there's no question about that. And so Michael, the producer, reached out to them, and several of their executives came this weekend, and just loved the show. And so they're very excited about splitting the house. And I thought it would be an important thing. And Michael, I'm so glad I agreed. The producer, an important thing to do. It's a way of us giving back to the community. And the way of helping Project Danger Food is, so don't think of this simply as an organization where they're going to give money and they're not really getting anything of it from it except for a good feeling. You can do the same thing, but get a show out of it as well, and something that hopefully people will take home and talk about, and that will enrich their lives. And I get emails every day from somebody who saw the show 3 weeks ago and said, I can't get the darn thing out of my mind. So that's kind of what we wanted to do, and we thought it would be a great partner to go with Project Danger Food, because there have been such incredible people in this community that if it could help them, I'm all for it. And they've been terrific. They're getting the word out. Kat's been wonderful she's a big supporter of Project Angel Food. So she's been great about spreading the word as well, saying, come on down, folks. This is a great way to give to a charity, and you get something back in return.
That is great. Well, man, I appreciate it. We've gone over the time I promised to have you on here.
Sorry.
Why don't you give everyone the web address or the play to get tickets for this last week, and then give your own social media. You have an excellent website with some great clips of things you've done and your social media.
Oh, thank you. Sure. The play is called Electricity. If you go to www.electricitytheplay, all one word, .com, it'll give you tons of information. You can also go to Facebook and look up Electricity the Play. We have our own page on Facebook right there. You can go to Conquering the Film and Television Audition. There's a Facebook page for that. It's also available at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Apple Bookstore, Kobo, any online bookstore. It's available, and it's also available in the Barnes & Noble Studio City in the store. The rest of them, I think, have to order it. And KevinScottAllen.com. We'll just sort of let you know what I'm up to. IMDb. A lot of times IMDb gets stuck before I do, for whatever reason. So that'll tell you what I'm up to. And if you're in town, please come see the play. And if you do, please wait and say hi to us afterwards. We really want to greet everybody. I made the point to everybody who sticks around, I'm going to greet afterwards, because it's, you know, you all came out and supported this show. It's a wonderful show, and Terry and I are going to make sure we come out and thank you personally.
Well, that is so awesome. Kevin, thanks so much for being on the show. I hope you'll come back whenever you have any other projects you'd like to talk about. You're just a delight to talk to. Thank you so much for being here, my friend.
Thank you for having me, Scott, and I wish you the best, and I look forward to coming back.
All right, well, stay on the line for me. We'll be back in just a couple of seconds. Guys, that
Alrighty.
Was... author Kevin Scott Allen. You're listening to the Left of Straight show. We're going to play a little bit of our friend Matt Van Fossen's Where You're Going to Run My Little Country, and I'll be back to wrap it up in just a couple of moments.
Sun coming up, West Virginia Highway, just couldn't sleep in the bed that you made. We gonna run to now. We gonna run to now. Radio on, coffee black in your cup. Don't know where you're going, only know you can't stop. We gonna run to now. We gonna run to now. When you run out of road, run out of reasons, run out of luck and lines to believe in, where you gonna run to? Running so fast, the past fall behind you. Running so fast, the future can't find you. Where you gonna run to now? It's how we wake up, reaching out to hold you, offering the love.
And we are back. Well, thank you so much to actor Kevin Scott Allen. I'm going to book for myself, even though I'm not even an actor. It just sounds really cool on the different things that he teases you on there. So I hope you look that up on Amazon. Guys, thanks for joining in today. We're only having our one guest. Today is a very busy week for me. I'm taking a little summer break just to get some things done. I have a lot of cool things in the work that I'll tell you about as they come up. We're trying to do a road trip across country back to California with a major sponsor and do some things with a couple of my other radio friends and people that I know, some of our celebrity guests we've had on. So that's in the works right now. I'm putting together a local Youngstown show for the LGBT community. So I have a lot of stuff to do. So we're only doing one guest today. I'm not going to be doing a show tomorrow or Wednesday this week. And Kevin and I are seeing what we're going to do. We're either going to do another live show on Thursday, or we're probably going to do a repeat this Thursday. So it's going to be a light week here on Left of Straight Radio. But thanks so much for being part of it. I appreciate it. If you have not downloaded the app yet, please go to either your iPhone or your Android. Go to your app store and type in the search engine Left of Straight Radio. That's LeftofStr and the number 8 radio. And you will get the app. It's free. Download it onto your phone. You will never miss an episode of any of our 3 shows. I'm so proud to be doing 4 LGBT shows 4 days a week right now. 2 Left of Straight shows on Monday and Tuesday. Standing on My Soapbox, our weekly call-in show for you to rant. And Healing Stigma, Left of Straight Radio, my great co-host Kevin Hogan, every Thursday. That's Monday through Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, every week. We try to have a show for you. Of course, it's summertime, so we're going to be having a little crazy schedule for the next couple of weeks. But it's been over 1 year now, and we have over 75 episodes of great content. So thanks for being part of the ride. Hope you guys have a great week. We will talk to you soon. And again, follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Left of Straight, on Facebook at The Left of Straight Show, or Scott Fullerton. Thanks for tuning in, guys. We will see you next week, and have a great evening.